Archive. The world is listening.
Hello and welcome to the Archive podcast. My name is Craig Hamilton and I'm your host. This is a podcast about people and their relationship with popular music. It's about how people react to technology, to formats, to changes and continuity, to memory and place. It's about how, for many of us, music is woven into the fabric of our everyday life and what it means to us. In each episode, I'll talk to somebody who does something interesting in their relationship to popular music, whether as a fan or as a practitioner of some kind. All of them, I think, have an interesting story to tell, and I hope you'll enjoy hearing these stories as they unfold in each episode. The hope is that hearing these stories will inspire you to tell your own, which is what Archive is all about.
Archive is a popular music research project that gathers stories online from people around the world about how, where and why they listen to music on a single day each year. Since launching in 2013, Archive has gathered around 8,000 stories, ranging from short tweets to long-form essays. The project will run for a fourth time on the 19th of July 2016, so if you're a music lover, please do consider telling us your story. You can find out one of the many ways you can do that and read more about the project by visiting www.archive.org. You can also find and follow us on Twitter at Archive. We'd love to hear your story.
Okay, so now you know a little bit more about Archive and what this show is about. So it's probably time to meet our first guest. As this is a podcast about people and popular music, I thought a good place to kick things off would be with a person who makes a podcast about popular music. That person is Matthew Billy, a New York-based radio producer and professional audio engineer who makes the fantastic Between the Liner Notes podcast. If you haven't come across this yet, I urge you to check it out. It's available through all the usual podcast places and has a website at betweenthelinernotes.com. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at btwnlinernotes. Each episode is a standalone story from popular music history, so you can dive in at any point. And since you've found your way to this podcast, I'm going to assume that you've got some sort of interest in popular music, so I think you'll probably enjoy it. Matthew kindly agreed to talk to me over Skype a few weeks ago, rising at a fairly uncivilized hour due to our respective time differences. And I started by asking him to describe Between the Liner Notes and how it came about.
So I started a version of Between the Liner Notes in 2012. And what that show was, it was an interview show with people who worked in the music industry. And it was just an interview show. I would sit down with them, talk to them, you know, ask about half an hour's worth of questions, trim a little fat off and release it. And that was fun. I met a lot of interesting people, but my listenership never got anywhere beyond about 500 people. So I stopped for a while, and then, you know, last August, so I guess that's August 2015, I missed it. You know, I hadn't done it in about a year and a half to 2 years, and I missed doing it. And so I came up with this new idea, which is like a documentary-style podcast about music stories. And what the goal of telling those stories is to kind of highlight an area of music that people don't really know so well. And so the last one I did was a story about taps, which is the American bugle call that gets played at all of the American military funeral ceremonies. Everybody in the United States knows that bugle call, but nobody knows anything about it. So what I wanted to do is kind of give a little background, you know, why it was composed in the middle of the American Civil War, and how it went from being this call to just, turn to go to bed at the end of the day for all the soldiers, and it turned into this thing that is now mandatory to be performed at military funerals. So that's really what the aim is to take things that people are aware of and really show them why they're aware of it.
And that, in a nutshell, is Matthew's show. It's covered subjects as diverse as the ownership of the song Happy Birthday, the origins of multi-track recording in Nazi Germany, and a record label operating at the time of the Cuban Revolution. It's all fascinating stuff. As I'm quite new to the process of making podcasts, I wanted to ask Matthew about the process of putting his show together. He told me that he has hundreds of ideas for shows, which can be inspired by a song on the radio, a conversation with a friend, or a line in a book. But once he's settled on one that he wants to work on, he goes through a process of research and reading, and will then find and interview a guest that he thinks will be suited to the story.
And what I do is then I play like a connect the dots game, where my narration has to connect the dots between all of these segments from the guest. And that's really what you see. So, I mean, that requires a pretty robust script writing process, which is hard for me because I'm not really a writer. So I write the script, spend a considerable amount of time editing it and hoping that I can get it tight so that the story never gets boring. And then I sit down in my closet, which I've turned into a vocal booth, which is actually where I am right now. And I record the voiceover to it. You know, and then once the voiceover is done, I, you know, spend a day mixing the whole thing together, which is the easy part because I'm a professional audio engineer. So,
and there you have one of the main reasons why I wanted to interview Matthew for this podcast. I found it really interesting that somebody who's a professional recording engineer and radio producer who works with music day in, day out in a professional capacity, but also who has an interest in popular music culture and history, and somebody who is also a fan of popular music, how all of those things kind of fit together. So I wondered what impact the process of making the Between a Line and Notes podcast has on his everyday listening.
What I find that the podcast does, obviously, you know, the time that I'm working on the podcast is time that I'm not listening to music, but it often kind of points my listening. So, for example, when I did that episode about Cuban music, for a month, I was just immersed in Cuban music from the 40s and 50s, you know, and I love that. And then what's funny is that you live with it for a month and that's all you hear for a month. And then as soon as you're done with the episode, it just totally pivots to something else. Like last month, all I did was listen to bugle calls and and music from the Civil War, the American Civil War. Which you can imagine is pretty weird when you've listen to that many bugle calls. I would imagine most people who are not in the military do not listen to as many bugle calls as I did last month. So that's what it is it points what I listen to.
I then moved on to ask Matthew about the technologies and formats he uses in his everyday listening. Although he's a fan of vinyl records, like a lot of people in the New York area, he's not exactly blessed with a great deal of space. So that's something he has on hold for the moment. In the meantime, he uses a lot of digital music services that many of us would be familiar with. And as you might expect from someone with a background in radio, he's interested in the ways in which these services recommend music and was particularly impressed with the way that one service, Songza, achieved that.
But they did a great thing where, and Google bought them, right? They're incorporating this idea into Google Play, where it wasn't like a random algorithm that was telling you what to listen to. It was they hired humans to curate these playlists. And what really sold me on this idea of a human curated playlist was when I needed some Christmas music. And you know, Christmas music, it's all the same every year. And I wanted something a little different. And I found this one that was like, you know, Christmas music from the 50s. And I would say about a third of the songs I had never heard before, and two thirds of the songs were arrangements of the songs that I had never heard before. So, you know, having Christmas music feel fresh like that is what really sold me on that service and the human curated playlist concept.
So we had a good old chinwag about digital music services, data, algorithms, and so on. And I think it's something that we're both interested in, so it could have gone on all day, but what I found quite interesting about the way Matthew described his experience with these kind of things is the way it always seemed to come back to a comparison with the role of the radio DJ.
For me personally, I do like a disc jockey because I think a disc jockey can add a human element that you can't really get otherwise, right? So if let's say a disc jockey does a theme show about, I don't know, Elvis or the Beatles, they can throw in like some sort of joke. Like, they can play, like, a Christmas song that John Lennon was on. Whereas if I was listening to a computerized recommendation system and I heard a Christmas song, I would think that the recommendation system was poorly programmed. I would never think that it made a joke.
So sticking with this theme of our relationship with popular music and how digital technologies might impact upon that, one of the other things I was interested in asking Matthew about was about the access that we now have to vast catalogues of popular music and also to information about that popular music. So in the past, if you found a record that you liked, you might never have found out anything about that particular band unless you stumbled across a book or you met somebody that told you. Whereas these days, if you hear a record, you can pretty much find out whatever you want to about that band or about that record within a couple of minutes. So I wondered whether many of us having access to such technologies perhaps changes our relationship to pop music's past.
For certain people, you know, I think, you know, you can't, it's not going to have any impact on someone who is not interested in the past. And unfortunately, I think there's a great number of people who really have no interest in history. But for people who do have an interest in history, I think we are in a golden age. I mean, the number, I belong to a website. I pay $10 a month called newspapers.com, and they have digitized dozens and dozens and dozens of American newspapers going back to like the late 1700s. Universities and place are like digitizing these archives, and you know, I can now listen to all of these field recordings of people like Alan Lomax, who drove around the American South recording these poor blues musicians. So yes, I think it has a huge difference, because not being able to do this from my living room and not having to travel to a place like the Library of Congress or some obscure university library to access these archives is a huge deal, you know? And I think it's fantastic that people are finding the resources to digitize their collections and make them available, often for free. And I really think that in terms of really not just my podcast, but all podcasts, and not just music, but really any sort of historical podcast, it's making a big difference, because this stuff is so available. And, in a sense, you can, something that has been sitting on a shelf collecting dust for years, if you put it on the internet and I discover it and then I contact you and you give me permission to use it in my podcast, all of a sudden, you know, the thing that was collecting dust is now being heard by thousands of people. That's exciting.
So moving on with this idea of the past, another thing I wanted to ask Matthew about was his own past and how he initially developed an interest not just in the technological side of popular music, but also in the kind of cultural and historical side. You know, what was it in his past maybe that makes him spend hours and hours of his spare time constructing these documentaries? And you know, really, where did it all start for him?
So I guess it happened in stages, right? I remember, I think I have to credit my parents a lot for this. They always played me music. You know, since I was 3 or 4, my father would make me cassette mixtapes of like the Beach Boys and all of these hits from the 50s and 60s that were like, you know, fun songs for a kid. The CD collection was always filled with artists like Billy Joel and Led Zeppelin and, you know, so all that kind of music. And then I think in fifth grade, I became more culturally aware. So I started turning on the radio and listening to whatever the popular music station was in the New York area at that time. And then I started getting, and that would have been around the time that bands like Pearl Jam and Madonna, not Madonna, what am I talking about? Pearl Jam and Nirvana and, sorry, like you said, it's very early here. you know, the whole alt-rock scene was really exploding. So it was a very exciting time to have began turning on the radio and listening to music for myself. And then at a certain point in high school, I didn't want to listen to modern music anymore. And I started diving into, older music. And I would get these collections of bands like Creedence Clearwater Revival. You know, I would, you know, stop listening to the Beatles' greatest hits and listen to them album by album by album, kind of, and get the development from their first album all the way to Abbey Road. And then, you know, Pink Floyd, I fell in love with Pink Floyd. Pink Floyd is actually the band that made me want to go into audio engineering, you know, and just like that. And then, you know, and it keeps going. It's like at different moments in your life, you just have this like, you're just struck by something and like a door opens and all of a sudden you're staring at this whole new genre of music and admiring how beautiful it is. And before you never even noticed that the door was there.
So talking of doors that open and present opportunities, Matthew went on to describe how that kind of initial teenage infatuation with popular music turned into something more career-based when he was volunteering at a radio station during his years at college. And it was an opportunity that presented itself almost unexpectedly when he was asked to work on a show that was helmed by two very, very important New York radio DJs.
A point came about a year after taking the job where the senior engineer there was leaving because he was graduating, and they needed someone to take the Saturday night shift. And as you can imagine, for a college student, giving up your Saturday night is a difficult thing to do. So none of the engineers at the radio station wanted to take the Saturday night shift. So when they asked me, I said, yeah, of course, I'll do it. And the reason I said yes is because I knew that these two old school DJs who kind of pioneered the freeform radio format back in the late 60s and through the 70s and 80s, they're very, very well known around the New York area. Their names are Pete Fornatel and Vin Scelsa. And I think they're comparable to a John Peel. So they're like the John Peel of the New York area. And, you know, they would put on these shows. These shows were 4 hours long. Nobody in management gave them a playlist. They would just play whatever they want, talked about whatever they want. And it was great. You know, I mean, they had spent their entire careers, you know, learning about music, talking about music, talking with musicians. So to have all of a sudden, you know, their education, I mean, they weren't directly trying to educate me, but it's like you get this wonderful education just by being in their orbit.
This talk of recommendation systems, digital technologies, DJs, and people like John Peel led us on to a discussion about the nature of podcasts and the possibility for that as a medium to be a useful form of music recommendation in digital environments.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's the world needs more people like John Peel. And I really hope that podcasting can kind of find a way to allow for some people like that. Because right now, with the way music licensing is working, if you play music without getting permission from both the songwriters and the record labels for every single song you play, you're kind of doing it illegally. And I think I was just doing a little research on this a little while ago. I think the Performing Rights Organization in England, PRS, is that right? They've come up with a blanket license for podcasts, right? So now you can pay a certain amount and you get the songwriting rights. But the organization that is in charge of the sound recording rights is going around suing podcasts or sending them cease and desist letters. You know, so in terms of podcasting, being able to cultivate people like John Peel, it just hasn't happened yet because of legal restrictions. And I think once those legal roadblocks are lifted, you're going to see a lot of people trying to be like John Peel. And some of them will get close to it. And a very few will reach that kind of level.
As with our discussion about digital music services and recommendation systems, the conversation that we were having about podcasts and all of the issues and potential around that medium for popular music could have gone on all day and could have been an entire episode in its own right. So maybe that's something I'll explore at a later date for the Harkive podcast. But in order to bring this particular episode to a close, I wanted to ask Matthew about his plans for Between the Liner Notes and what we might expect to hear over the coming months through the show.
What else do I have? I also want to do a show about disco and why it became popular. And then I want to focus on one event that happened in Chicago at a baseball park called a Disco Demolition Day, where this disc jockey, who was pretty popular around those parts, organized at this event where he had people bring their disco vinyl to the baseball game. They were going to put it in a big pile in center field and then blow it up. Like dynamite, boom. And he did this. And that was supposed, it was a doubleheader baseball game that day. And in between the two games, this was the event that people did. So first of all, this was the only game that year for the Chicago White Sox that sold out. You know, there's like 70,000 people. They had a discount on beer, so they were all sloshed. And after they blew up all the vinyl, there was a riot, and all the people jumped onto the field and destroyed the field. It got so bad that the Chicago White Sox had to forfeit the second game of the doubleheader. But what's amazing, and there's no way to prove, you know, that correlation is equivalent to causality, but within 6 months, 90 to 95% of the disco formatted radio stations in the United States stopped airing disco. It's like, it's almost like disco crashed like a stock market. What could have been the cause was this, you know, little gimmicky event called Disco Demolition Day. So hopefully I'll get a show out about that too.
Well, I'll certainly be keeping an ear out for that particular episode on the Between a Line of Notes podcast, which once again you can find at betweentheliner.notes.com or on Twitter, BTWN Liner Notes. I'd like to thank Matthew once again for being a guest on this, the very first episode of the Harkive podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to it, and it may have inspired you to tell your story to the Harkive Project about the detail of your popular music listening experience. I'll see you next time. Thanks.
www.harkive.org. To have new episodes of the Harkive podcast delivered automatically, subscribe to the Harkive podcast on iTunes. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do leave a rating. The Harkive Project is part of a PhD research project by Birmingham City University doctoral candidate Craig Hamilton and is funded by the AHRC Midlands Three Cities Doctoral Partnership.
The time's 18 minutes to 9. The online music research project, Harkive.
When and how you listen to music, because it's Harkive Day.
Where they listened and what they listened to, or is this a worldwide
project? Featuring little gems, brief snapshots of other people.
It's an online project that aims to gather stories from music fans worldwide about how, why, and where they listen to music on a single day.
For the rest of the day. I ask you this because...
Now, what kind of music have you been listening to today?